Let's all go to the lobby. 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 Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Shakedown, the weekly podcast that functions as a grab bag for all things film. I'm your host, Kyle Craigbaum, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, my good friend, Jane Long. Hello, how you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. It's good to be on the show.
Absolutely. We are going to be talking about the John Wick franchise today, all four films, including the newly released John Wick Chapter 4. Before we get into that, how you doing? Have you seen anything else recently? What's going on?
We saw 65 with Adam Driver.
Yeah, I talked about that last week. It's a big old stinky turd.
Yeah, that was a movie that we watched.
Yeah. Yeah.
I rewatched Spirited Away. That's a fun movie. I like that one a lot.
Oh, it's an amazing movie. Yeah.
Been watching Community with my significant other. That's one of my favorite shows. Love to just go back to it all the time.
Yep. Great. Amazing sitcom.
Yeah. Nothing crazy.
No. Yeah. We watched Last of Us a few weeks ago, but yeah. But yeah. I mean, we were full up on John Wick movies this week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can just hop right into this. No point in delaying. 2014, we got John Wick 1. Spoilers for the first three John Wick films. John Wick follows a retired assassin named John Wick. He was supposedly one of the scariest motherfuckers ever. Completely terrifying. They called him the Baba Yaga, the boogeyman. But he's been out of the game for 5 years until the passing of his wife. Upon her passing, she gifts him with a dog to kind of remember her by, carry on the legacy, whatever, and have something to love. And then some hooligans break into his house, steal his car, and kill his dog, which propels him back into the assassin world to get revenge. And that's John Wick. So this was your first time watching all these movies, right?
Yeah, I hadn't seen any of them. I kind of knew that, like, the shtick was he kills everybody he wants to. Like, he's kind of an unstoppable force, the indomitable human spirit incarnate.
Yeah, right.
But I didn't quite understand that there was, like, a whole assassin world with, like, rules and world building and, like, all this kind of black market, shady underground stuff, which I actually thought really, really built into, like, making this franchise so good. I think otherwise it would have, you know,
exactly,
kind of fallen apart.
Me giving that plot description makes it sound like 100 other movies, you know? Mm-hmm. The revenge story, it's all in the presentation.
Yeah.
It's all in how the world is built. Like you said, the world building. They really... It's kind of doled out slowly in this first one, and then the sequels do a lot more with it, but there's this whole assassin's code, and the people at the top are called the table, and they make all the rules for the assassins, and there's hotels that assassins can stay at where you're not allowed to conduct business on their grounds. It's just a lot of really, like, dense world building that, like, makes it feel so unique. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I never watched them in the first place, because I didn't know that, and so I was just kind of like, oh, you know, it's the action movie where the guy kills everyone.
Exactly.
And I wasn't really drawn to it. I heard that they were probably good, but until we actually sat down and watched them, I didn't get the hype.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing that's hyped up about these movies so much is the action, obviously, and it's impeccable. It's fantastic. The first movie has the worst action, and that's saying something because the action is still really good in the first movie. You get the two major set pieces in this one are hit the first raid on his home by the group of assassins, and then the nightclub fight, and both are so well choreographed, and Keanu Reeves is such a great physical actor.
He sells his interaction with all of the props and the choreography so well. Everything looks like it has weight, and then it's like is actually like a life or death situation.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, it helps so much that he's doing his own stunts and choreography.
Oh, yeah.
And his own, like it's not just in how he holds a gun, but in how he conducts the martial arts aspects to the hand-to-hand, it all is so convincing. This one is certainly the most simple film in the franchise. Mm-hmm. It's very straightforward, but it's also, you know, it's emotionally involving. You really want him to kill all these people. They like, it's effective at what it's doing.
And it certainly sets the stage for the rest of the movies. It really, like, lays all the groundwork and gives us the jumping off point so that the other three movies can really kind of be their own trilogy that don't really need a ton of foundational work because that all happens in the first one.
Exactly, exactly. It's such a great, like, a stepping stone to the rest of the franchise. So simple, so well executed, so lean. There's not an ounce of fat on this first one, like an hour 40. It just moves, it's over. You're like, wow. The villain's great. I love his performance. Mm. The way he delivers lines with a fucking pencil.
I personally love the
cool it. There's Willem Dafoe is in this one.
Oh,
he's
fun. I forgot.
This is the one I have the least to say about, but it's so good.
Yeah.
That nightclub fight is awesome. And
It's just, it wraps itself up with this nice little bow.
Yep.
And it's just, yeah. Really solid movie.
This was almost a direct-to-DVD movie, like when they were in the planning process making it, and then look at what it becomes is so crazy.
Yeah.
It also sets up like the main supporting characters for the entire franchise, which is Ian McShane as Winston and Lance Reddick, R.I.P. as Charon. Mm-hmm. They're the main. Winston is the manager of the New York Continental, the Assassin Hotel. He is great. He's the homie, and then Charon is like the receptionist. He's the lobby boy, and he's fantastic as well.
His concierge.
The concierge, and everything is just I love these movies.
With the world building being so in depth, you'd think that it would be difficult to explain how everything works to the audience, but it's just that. They don't explain it to you. They just show you it working because all of the characters in the world already know how it works. And so none of them have to explain it. And they just trust that the audience will understand. And we do. It's not that hard to follow, but they make it seem like it's a world that's lived in that exists and has existed for a long time.
No need for useless exposition here.
Yeah.
That's the thing about these movies. You don't have to give a caveat or an asterisk. Like, yeah, the action's great, but you know the rest. And it's like the action is great, and it's in service of the story and mm-hmm. the world building.
Yeah,
like you can tell characters' motivations just by a look or by an action or by the way they fight. You can tell things about them. It's storytelling through action.
Yeah,
love it. Yeah, this first one, I think that's about, because I want to get to the meat of it. Rate it however you want. I gave it a 4.5 on Letterboxd, a very light 4.5. I was between a 4 and a 4.5. I gave it an 85 out of 100, because I rate out of 100 like a douchebag, so.
I ended up rating it a 4 upon my initial watch, and I think I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah.
Just because I think that the other three really build upon it so much stronger that they deserve the higher ratings.
That's fair. John Wick Chapter 2 came out 3 years later. It was in 2017. Do you want to give a little plot synopsis for 2?
Yeah. John Wick 2 kind of follows the same thing. He's on his vengeance path. He's trying to take down the mob that's associated with the mob in the first movie. And he gets presented with a marker, which is kind of a blood pact between him and someone else who's gifted him a favor in the past, and it's his turn to return the favor. And as lots of heroes do, he declines that call to adventure, I think at least twice.
Yeah.
Before he finally accepts it and is forced to assassinate one of the council people of the high table that's kind of in charge of this whole underground. He does so and then is hunted by not only the brother of this councilwoman, but also the man that forced him to do it.
Yeah.
So he's kind of on the run, but not from his own free will. He didn't really do anything particularly wrong himself. He was forced into this situation. And so he decides he's going to get revenge himself first,
yeah,
and try to outrun the bounty, basically.
Yeah, it ups the stakes in every way from the first one.
Yeah.
It ups the action beats. It ups the, like, the heightened, very self-serious... We didn't even discuss it in the first movie, but these movies are inspired a lot by Greek mythology, mm-hmm, in a lot of different ways. Specifically with John Wick as a character and as a idea.
Yeah, he's presented as almost a mythical being in the underworld to an extent.
Yeah.
To the point where when people meet him that are trying to kill him, they're like, oh, I'm such a big fan, I never thought that I'd actually meet you.
Yeah.
Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, exactly. He is, like, infamous to, like, the nth degree. But, yeah, from the first scene in the second one, which is him, his car that was stolen in the first one, it's him trying to get it back.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, a slapstick car sequence that is so funny and well shot and wild. Like, you're like, oh, we're here now, such like a leap in quality.
Yeah. No, he spends so much time getting his car back. Mm-hmm. It ends up almost completely destroyed, to the point where I was thinking it's like the ship of Theseus.
Yeah,
it's the the John Wick car,
right? And at the end of the first one, he gets a new dog.
Oh, yeah.
New dog. His name is Dog. He doesn't have a name. John Wick doesn't name him. He's just Dog. But he is, he's just like this cute little boy. And, yeah, the villain that we were talking about, the one that has the marker for him, he blows up his house when he refuses.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that propels John to Rome? Are they in Rome? No, it's the catacombs. So it's,
Yeah, it's Rome.
It's Rome, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so many memorable sequences in this movie, as it builds, the girl that dies, Gianna, her death scene in, like, the pool or the tub where she cuts her wrist is such an insane visual and, like, character moment.
It almost felt like a From Software, like, boss fight villain.
Yeah.
With their kind of death scene. It felt very reminiscent of that, where it just held so much weight out of nowhere, but it didn't feel wrong.
Right, yeah. It's the way that these movies, they're so grandiose, the way they build. Because then that propels you into a crazy, like, double fight scene. It's first at, like, this rave at, like, this, like, outdoor nightclub, and then it moves into the catacombs where he's just gunning people down left and right with, like, guns that he planted in the tunnels.
Yeah, because in the first one, he's kind of like, oh, I've just come out of retirement. I'm still great, but I'm not at the top of my game. But in two, Keanu plays it visibly better. Like, he is so much more of, like, a monster in this one.
Right, yeah, he's a beast. He can't be stopped. Because then, after that, you move into the knife fight with Common,
yeah,
which is fantastic.
Cassius.
Just this brutal, like, back-to-back. I think Common's really also fun in the physical, like, performance is really good. A lot of, like, memorable little henchmen in this. Ruby Rose plays a deaf henchman. That has a fun fight with him near the end.
Yeah.
And
speaking of her being deaf, we get lots of subtitles across these movies because characters speak in different languages.
Russian,
they speak
in
sign language. And the subtitles are actually really unique. They're positioned where your eyes normally would be drawn to instead of at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
And they bold specific letters or words to draw your attention to what, like, the main context of what they're saying is.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
It's really cool. It's like a TikTok edit.
Yeah, it's like something you wouldn't think about when you're putting the film together,
when they call him Baba Yaga, the, like, highlight or boogeyman's in, like, bolded black text.
Yeah.
It's really, there's a part in 4 to skip ahead where, like, someone feels Braille and the, like, text appears as he's feeling it. I was like, that's really...
So we know, like, what he's read once he stops and he's like, oh.
It's really cool. Really, like, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah, you didn't have to, but you did. It mattered. It went the extra mile.
I will say about 2, probably has my least favorite villain of the movies, mm-hmm, least memorable. Like, he's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing too special.
But he does force John Wick to break the rules in almost the worst way possible.
Absolutely. Which comes after one of the best set pieces in all of these movies, which is the mirror, the labyrinth of mirrors, which is so cool. I don't know how they did that.
Yeah.
Like,
the camera just didn't exist, I guess.
They just painted it out so many times.
Yeah.
I can't
imagine.
But yeah, that's such an incredible, memorable fight, which leads to, John Wick, this guy goads him basically into assassinating him in the hotel. Because he's been on the run from John Wick the whole movie, and John finally corners him, and he's not going to let him go again, so he just shoots him in the head, which gets him excommunicated, basically stripped of his rank. What's supposed to happen is they're supposed to just kill him. But Winston obviously has a soft spot for John, so he's like, I'll give you an hour, and then none of our services are for you anymore, and everyone's going to be after you. There's going to be, like, a huge millions of dollars on your head.
Yeah, because I think the villain had put a bounty of $7 million, and once he was executed in the hotel, the high table excommunicated John and doubled the bounty to $14 million and put it internationally. So John has no home. He has no services after the hour's up. He's excommunicated, and there's $14 million open international bounty on his head.
Right, yeah. And that's how they end it. That's like that cliffhanger.
Yeah.
They just end it there. It's like, holy shit. Come back. Yeah, you'll come back.
He just runs off into the street.
Yeah. What a wild ending. What a crazy... I totally forgot there's a knife fight on a train with Common. Where he, like, where he stabs him, but then because he used to be friends with Common, he's like, hey, take this knife out. You bleed out. Leave it in. You can get help. Bye.
Yeah.
And they say be seeing you a lot. Mm-hmm. Be seeing you. As, I don't know, they say it when they're either dying or, they're never going to see this person again, essentially. Yeah. Be seeing you. In another life, maybe, whatever. But it's such a... They have, like, these phrases that they use, like, through the movies. And it makes it feel all, like, so consistent.
Yeah.
I am of service. I will be of service.
I have served. I will be of service.
Yeah, yeah. Just so cool.
Yeah.
So cool. This movie, I like just a titch more than the first one.
Yeah.
I think there's maybe a little lull in the middle of the second one, like just a tiny bit. In ways I prefer the simplicity of the first one, but I think this one elevates like a lot of the action and choreography. If I gave the first one an 85, this one's an 86. Like it's like really like they can go back and forth for me. These first two. If you want to drop your rating for the second one.
Yeah, I actually did end up giving the second one a 4.5.
Yeah.
Pretty much solely for the increased world building and dramatization, especially the death scene of Gianna.
Yeah.
And then the knife fights and the mirror set piece.
Yeah.
I think that elevated it.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah, absolutely. 2019, we got John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum, which is Latin for prepare for war. And this one starts immediately where the second one leads off. John Wick's on the run. He has less than an hour to get to shout to get some weapons because then everyone's going to be coming after him. And that's what happens. This movie is immediately just a wild chase to kill John, which kind of evolves into him attempting different ways to kind of get out or get this bounty off his head or just anything. I forgot to mention it too because he's going to be important in this one. We meet a character called the Bowery King, played by Lawrence Fishburne. He basically has a bunch of spies dressed as homeless people around the city. And he has, like, eyes and ears everywhere.
He's got messenger pigeons and everything.
He's a fun character, man.
Yeah.
We going to Applebee's after this. It's so funny. But, yeah, he'll be important for this one. But, yeah, this movie just goes 0 to 100 immediately. The first 45 minutes is just an elongated action sequence with him.
Yeah.
Running for his life. Pedal to the metal immediately. Yeah. You get an incredible sequence where they're all chasing John, and they end up in, like, a knife shop with, like, windows full of knives, and they just start throwing them at each other. Just one of the fun, most fun things I've ever seen.
Yeah,
just hilariously, back and forth. Hilarious, like, slapstick. This movie excels at, like, slapstick action.
Yeah.
Like, pratfall.
Excuse me. The moment where they both realize the walls surrounding them are full of knives, yeah. And they both just smash the glass to grab a weapon.
This one in particular, I think 4 has quite a few of them too, but this one has a lot of the stuntmen from the Raid franchise, mm-hmm. And man, their physicality, the way they move, it
you
makes
can
it,
tell.
Yeah, it feels so, like, impactful.
They have, like, 100% control over how their body is moving, and you can see it
At all times, which we'll talk about when we get to, like, the climax, but... This set piece in the knives immediately turns into a set piece in a stable of horses, which is incredible, where he's killing people by, like, smacking a horse on the ass so it, like, kicks its feet and breaks a guy's neck, and then he'll get on the horse and he's shooting people, and which evolves into him grabbing a motorcycle and then fighting people with samurai swords on other motorcycles, like...
Yeah.
The first 45 minutes of this movie is basically, like, action nirvana. Just incredible... incredible moments. It finally slows down in the middle and you get, like, some plot. So essentially there's a what is the job title of the girl, they visit the hotel and they're like, we're gonna you have, like, a week to pack your things and we're gonna find someone else. They have, like, a job title.
Oh, the adjudicators.
Adjudicator. Adjudicator visits them, and they're basically going to deconsecrate the hotel. Or they're not in this one. They're basically just going to replace Winston because he let John go for that hour.
Yeah.
And they hire a guy to go after John personally, named forgetting his name. Where's the villain's name? Zero. Didn't know that was his name. Mark DeCosco's. And he's a fun character. Very silly. He's, like, John Wick's number one fan.
Yeah, he's, like, the fanboy.
Yeah. It's such a fun character thing. But while this is happening, John goes to visit an old friend in Halle Berry's character, Sophia. Why are they there again? I'm fuzzy on little details.
He did go, I think, to his family. We get, like, the ballet
oh,
stuff.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. That's how he gets out of the country.
Yeah, he gets his ticket torn, is what they call it. He has, like, a symbol that he's part of a certain mob family, and he gets that revoked so that they can take him out of the country so that he can get to Halle Berry's character, who he has a marker on, who he has a blood pact with.
Yes, exactly. And he needs her help to find someone.
The Elder is who he's looking
for. He's finding the Elder for the purpose... That's where I'm just a little fuzzy.
He's trying to get out. He's trying to be like, I want to get my excommunication, like, revoked. I want to, like, be put back.
Exactly.
Like, before the way... I just want to be safe and be out of, like, harm's way.
100%.
And so the Elder is the only person above the table that they, he knows about. So he elicits his marker to Halle Berry to get her to help him.
Yeah. And, it starts an incredible set piece with attack dogs. Two attack dogs that Halle Berry has. And, like, 100 guys. This scene is so fucking great. Halle Berry kills it. She's doing great with the stunt work.
This is actually one of the first set pieces that we actually follow a different character for most of the time.
Yeah, it's mostly a Halle Berry set piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's such an impact. The dogs are great stunt. The great stunt dogs.
Yeah, really good.
It's like such a crazy set piece. It explodes. You're like, oh, hell yeah. Then we get some more plot. John goes to the fucking desert and walks until he basically is dying. And then he's picked up by...
one of the elders.
Another elder.
Like, people.
Who's like, we can get you out. Just go kill Winston for us. Because he's kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah. But then John will be
They also take one of John's fingers.
Yes, his ring finger specifically, which is a kind of big deal to him.
Yeah, yep. And so he goes back. he confronts Winston, but he's obviously not going to kill Winston. Winston's his buddy.
Yeah, I mean, even if he does, he's just going to be serving the table the rest of his life. He's not going to be out. He's just going to be
right
free under the table.
So the adjudicator's like, all right, this place is deconsecrated. Fucking kill him. So the hotel becomes deconsecrated, which means...
turns into a war zone.
It turns into a war zone. This kickstarts an amazing climax. You get Lance Reddick, Charon joins in on the action. He's shooting people. The people in the climax that John Wick is fighting, they're armored up this time. Mm-hmm. So he has to, like, lift the mask up and, like, shoot them in the neck or, like, aim for the head. He's, like, shooting them, like, 50 times in the chest so they'll fall down and then shooting them. Just this crazy...
it's like tackling people, he's using blades, like everything at his disposal.
Yep. And then it evolves as he takes on the two guys from the raid in a martial arts fight scene in like this kind of like museum-y area.
Yeah.
Which starts with one of the funniest bits of slapstick I've ever seen where he gets kicked through like... 5 panes of glass in a row. They just, in one take, they just keep kicking him and he'll get up and they kick him again.
And then you think he's finally out of it and they push him into the other side of glass containers.
It's so funny. Oh my god. But this fight is incredible because, yeah, those raid guys, they're on another level.
Yeah.
And, like, it's also, like, when I'm talking about them building character, it's like they'll knock John down, but then they'll like wait for him to get up because they want it to be like a fair fight. They don't want to kill him while he's down.
They know that he's tired and like exhausted and it's not like he's not at his full strength, and they're kind of Goku style. They want to fight him at his full potential.
And it's like a mutual respect because when John eventually wins at the end, he's like, yeah, you guys, I won't kill you.
Yeah.
Like they all like, yeah, but like the floor's made of glass and they fall through. This fight is just incredible.
Yeah.
And then there's another fight after that where he fights the main villain, Mark Dacascos, which is a great, fun martial arts.
He fights him with his belt for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And this one is in front of like this really crazy, trippy, like LED like panel on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Where like the symbols are. It just looks so damn cool. The neon, like tinted. Every film, the lighting just gets more, like, maximalist and, like, over-the-top bright, like, reds and greens and blues. It looks so cool. It's, like, undeniably so just cool.
They make it fun and engaging to look at.
Yes.
Even if you're not absorbing the actual action.
It helps so much that these movies, all four of them were directed by Chad Stahelski, who is a stuntman, and, like, that's what you needed.
Yeah, you can tell.
He knows how to frame action. He knows how to do stunts. He knows how to get those performance out of stunt actors. It never feels like stunt actors. It feels like this person just fucking died.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then yeah, he ends up killing Mark Dacascos. He wins, obviously. And then he goes to the rooftop to kind of, wrap things up. And Winston's talking to the adjudicator up there.
Yeah, they make a parlay because the adjudicator's realized, oh, John's just gonna kill everyone. We need a different approach.
Yeah. And they're basically like, hey, Winston, what are we gonna do about John? And Winston shoots him off the roof.
Yeah, he just falls like 8 stories or something.
It's a betrayal, but at the same time, Winston knows that he's wearing a bulletproof suit and that he'll probably survive, and it's probably the best chance he has.
Yeah, otherwise he's just going to get executed.
Right. So it's a betrayal, but also not. And he's kind of, John's like mutilated. He's very injured, and he's recovered by the Bowery King, by Lawrence Fishburne, who's like, I'm really pissed off at all this shit. Fucking get back to work.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna make a friend out of John Wick because then I'll have John Wick as one of my friends.
Yeah, and that's a big moment.
Yeah.
This movie is incredible. This third one is where the ante really starts to get upped in a big way.
Yeah. It facelifts all the themes that we've seen already and just builds upon them even further, because in the second one, we have the villain approached John with the marker, and John denies it and is like, please don't make me do this. Like, you're pulling me back into a life I don't want. Where in this one, we get that exact scene mirrored, and he goes to Halle Berry, and she's like, please don't do this. I have a daughter. I'm management now. Yeah. I don't kill people anymore. And John's like, I need this, and you have a duty to help me.
And that is further, we'll talk about it when we get to Donnie Yen's character from 4, of parallels, but this third film in particular talks a lot about consequences mm-hmm. and cause and effect in terms of you do something in the present, there are future consequences, yeah. good or bad.
Yeah. And kind of questioning, trying to make John question, mm-hmm. are the actions that you're taking in the present worth the consequences in the future?
Yeah. And quite literally him getting shot on the rooftop. I mean, there's 100 moments you could name that play into the theory of John as Sisyphus continuously pushing the boulder and then falling all the way back down.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's such a potent metaphor, and like these are like Greek epics, but as modern day action movies.
Yeah.
What a bold thing to do.
Yeah.
So cool. I love this movie. I'd give it a 92%.
Yeah, this one, since I'm not rating on a scale of 100, this one is also 4.5 for me.
Yeah, it's also 4.5 for me.
It's a much more solid 4.5.
Strong 4.5.
Than 2 is.
And then we get to 4.
And 4.
So, do you want to give a spoiler-free little synopsis?
Spoiler-free, John Wick is teamed up with the Bowery King.
Yep.
And they kind of go on a quest to wrap things up, put things the way they want them in the underground world, and take revenge on whoever they deem they want revenge on, and fix whatever problems they perceive in the underground.
Yep. Meanwhile, our main villain this time around is a guy named Marquis de Grammont, played by Bill Skarsgård,
yeah.
who is one of the
Mr. Pennywise,
one of the heads of the table, or he's not on the table, but
no,
he's a major player in terms of like that business side.
I don't really remember why, but he kind of has like the table's full resources at his disposal to kill John Wick, and so once again, it is everyone against John Wick,
and John looking for another way out. I know it's been that way for but that's his main arc. That's him.
Yeah.
It's
kind of him.
Yeah.
He wants out, but this one deals a lot with, like, he is a killer through and through. So once he does get out, is that going to be enough for him? Like, what purpose does he have?
Yeah. This movie is astonishing spectacle on a level that we never get.
Yeah.
Never
stops.
This is the Mission Impossible Fallout, the Mad Max Fury Road of this year. I think it deserves to be in the name of those. There are things they do with action in this movie that I have not seen people do before.
Yeah.
He's like rewriting action filmmaking here. It's incredible. This movie is interesting because without spoilers, it's kind of divided into three sections, mm-hmm. three different plot arcs that kind of move into each other and like evolve as they go. There's a main one in Japan, there's a main one in Berlin, and then the final one in Paris. And the way this kind of evolves and takes John's character and kind of wraps up his arc in such a satisfying way to me, what they do with the side characters, mm-hmm. they also introduce so many great side characters in this movie and great side performances. Yeah. Donnie Yen is incredible in this movie
Kane.
Kane.
There's equally there's just flat out more action that we get, but specifically with the introduction of Kane, we get a lot more of that martial arts vibe where in the past we've had a lot more kind of like modern shootout stuff.
Yeah.
Aside from the raid guy stuff.
I mean, Donnie Yen just being one of the all-time great martial artist, like, just helps so much with that. And I haven't seen him in something since Rogue One, so he's exceptional in this. And then Bill Skarsgård is fucking hilarious and slimy as the villain. Yeah. Probably the most hateable villain in the series.
Oh, 100%. He's such a little weasel.
You get the return of everyone. Friggin' Clancy, Mr. Krabs in this movie as the Harbinger. You get a really cool character named, he's credited as Mr. Nobody, Shamir Anderson. He's fantastic in this. Hiroyuki Sanada's in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite actors. So, this movie just moves. It just moves. and oh my god, it looks incredible. The cinematography, not just during the action scenes,
just
but
all the time.
All the time. The framing, the production design, every building is so grand. Every shot feels like it's so purposeful and like and conveying some kind of meaning. The color is incredible.
Yeah, the lighting is just impeccable.
The main improvements, and I love the ones the way the other movies look, but the main improvements in this movie are cinematography and the score is fucking great.
Yeah.
The score incorporates a lot of like a synth and a lot of just swelling orchestration. I don't even really remember the score on the first three, but this
Me
one
neither.
Is like...
I was gonna say, yeah, the first three I didn't even clock the score, but in this one I noticed it a lot and in like the best way possible.
Yeah, it's just, it's so cool. And then they use a lot of licensed songs in the third act, and those work well too.
Yeah.
Those are so well placed.
They like weave them into the story.
The third act is outstanding. The third act is incredible. It is balls to the walls. I mean, the second act's great too, and it has a really fun set piece in a nightclub, but the third act is just insane.
Yeah.
And elevates so much.
Just on a different level.
It's hard for me to talk about this without spoiling, because I want to jump right in. So we can, unless there's anything you wanted to say else spoiler free.
No, not really. I can't think of anything spoiler-free that I really want to
say.
Yeah,
exactly. This movie's a 5. I gave it a 96. I fucking love this movie.
I also gave this movie a 5. With the disclaimer that I probably wouldn't have unless I had seen the other three.
We were accompanied by someone who had not seen any of the other movies, and they enjoyed it, but, like, you're obviously not going to get the full arc, the full extent of what John has been through, because a lot of it is like, how many times can this one guy like go through this?
And this one actually does a lot more story and character work and kind of follows more so the people who are trying to track and kill John, more so than John himself. And so the our friend who hadn't seen any of the other three, she was feeling the least gung-ho about John. She cared the least about him and his success because of that.
Yeah, he does not actually have a... Starting spoilers now. He doesn't have a lot of lines in this movie. And when he does talk, it's like one sentence and he's done, he's gone. He seems so fucking tired, which is totally like apt. I mean, fucking Keanu's almost 60 in this movie and he's still moving like a crazy person.
Yeah.
Some of the... But, yeah, so the first set piece in this film, I mean, aside from the little short one in the desert, which is fun,
mm-hmm.
It starts with a fucking reference to Lawrence of Arabia, because that's the kind of movie it is, the sunset shot. It's so fucking cool. But a really fun little set piece. And then we're in Japan. And
we're at the Osaka Continental Hotel.
Oh, I guess that happens after... So Winston and Charon are called before before Bill Skarsgård, who's really pissed about this John Wick mucking everything up. So he shoots Charon, kills him, and blows the fucking hell out of the New York Continental.
That's right.
Just detonates it, and he basically is like, New York is my playground now. And they're like, oh no. So John goes to the Osaka Continental. To visit an old friend played by Hideyuki Sanada, to kind of like discuss like what the fuck are we gonna do,
and we get this nice through line with like kind of friendship. John has lots of like friends between these movies where he can go to for refuge, and there's a really nice line that Hideyuki says that's what is the point of friendship if not during the hard times or something like that?
Or the inconveniences. Like, absolutely.
Like, there's no point in friendship unless you can lean on it in tough times.
Right, exactly.
Because John feels bad that he's bringing kind of this death and this danger to his doorstep.
And he does end up bringing death and destruction to his doorstep because, unfortunately, Donnie Yen, who is an old friend of John's...
He is manipulated...
They obviously threaten his daughter,
and
they're like, go kill John for us. And so Kane goes to the hotel with a group of Bill Skarsgård's men to consecrate and lay waste to this place. And you immediately know, just from these shots, you're like, holy shit, this movie's operating at a different level.
Yeah.
You have set pieces in here. I mean, every, I say action sequence, I mean sequence. I mean five different action scenes that all roll into each other back to back to back to back to back.
Because we get all the security guards at the hotel with their bows and arrows firing down onto the lobby with the main group fighting with samurai swords against these, like, high table bodyguards or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then that rolls right into John on the roof with the concierge of the Osaka Hotel fighting for their lives to get back down.
Great sequence. One of my favorite kills is when the guy gets an arrow to the knee and then shot in the head. And he's just, like, dangling there. But, yeah, that whole set piece is great and sets it. And then it just keeps evolving. Then you get an amazing set piece with Donnie Yen placing doorbell alarms around a...
like motion sensors.
A kitchen. So he'll know when people pass it. Oh my god, that's such a cool scene. He move. He's giving such a convincing blind performance. The way he moves, the way he's like feeling everything in his environment, it's so committed. I think he's great in this movie.
Yeah.
I think he's like the standout performance.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And then you get an amazing, amazing set piece with John fighting, I mean, obviously he's shooting a bunch of people and it turns into him grabbing a pair of nunchucks and just wailing on probably eight waves of dudes. They just keep, we started laughing every time another wave came in because it just kept going.
Yeah.
And going and going and going.
And he stuck with the nunchucks for a while, but we haven't seen John use really anything other than small blades and assortment of firearms. So now seeing him in this movie, he gets a couple of longer blades at times, but the nunchuck specifically, like, that was a completely different physical performance than we've seen him give before.
Yeah, he'll, like, reload the gun with, like, the nunchucks, like, wrapped around his neck, like, resting on it, and then pull them off, and it, like, it's so...
Yeah.
And then it ends with what you said is, like, Chad Stahelski's test run for Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
As Hideyuki Sanada and Donnie Yen have a samurai sword fight, and it's great. It's beautiful looking.
It's outside, like, there's, like, a still pool, and then there's also, like, one of those gate fence things.
Yeah.
I don't remember what they're called. It pulls out all the colors, the reds and the blues and the greens of, like, the forest, and they have their samurai fight under the moonlight.
Yeah.
With, like, I think there's, like, candles lit as well.
Looks incredible.
It's amazing to look at.
Amazing moment. I also love the little supporting character of Hideyuki Sanada's daughter, played by Rini Sawayama. There's a part where she, like, climbs up somebody while stabbing them with two knives.
Yeah.
That's, like, we got a lot of laughs out of this movie just because of, like, the audacity of what they were doing.
Yeah, just the absurd things we were seeing them do.
Yeah, just insanity. Yeah, that whole opening section in Japan is incredible.
One of the best, like, set pieces in the whole movie, actually.
Amazing. Amazing. I loved that sequence so much. And then you have some more plot. John visits Winston because while he's leaving the hotel in Japan, he finds the symbol that all of whatever that guy's name is, the Bill Skarsgård's character wears.
Yeah, he kind of has like a marquee. His own little logo.
And Winston's like, okay, so basically the one way you get out of this is go get accepted into another family because I know you got your ticket torn, and then challenge him to a duel to the death.
Yeah, challenge Bill Skarsgård to a duel. And if you win while you're part of the family, you can set terms and you can get free.
And while this is happening, our character of Mr. Nobody or Tracker, he saves John's life. His goal is basically to keep John out of danger for long enough for the bounty to keep going up so he can get more money when he kills him. That's fucking... He also has a tracker dog.
Yep.
Great, good boy. there's some crazy parts with him, but he's a really fun character too.
He's got a bulletproof backpack.
Bulletproof backpack that he flips in front of him at one point. So the middle act of this movie is John going to Berlin in an attempt to get accepted to another family. And they're basically like, okay, we will accept you to the family if you go fucking kill the guy that killed some, like,
our
brother,
old leader.
Our old leader, yeah, someone yeah. close to it. And that leads them to a hilarious character played by Scott Adkins named Killa, who is this big, fat, like, mobster with gold teeth.
And an inhaler. Don't forget the gold-plated inhaler.
Who keeps laughing at everything. He is such a funny character. And kind of it brings all our characters together for a little short little poker game.
Yeah, we get the three characters that want to kill John mm-hmm. sitting at a table with John.
Yeah. And then they all work to save John.
Yeah.
Killa. And, yeah, Killa. And you get this great fight with this clearly, like, martial art expert, but in a big fat suit. He just does, like, a roundhouse kick. But John's fighting people in this nightclub, and there's, like, water pouring.
All the bodyguards have, like, these axes that we haven't seen before.
Oh, some great, like, hatchet kills.
Yeah.
Like, this is a hilarious fight, too. I love how nobody in any of these movies in, like, these nightclub fights react at all.
No.
I think it's part of the charm, yeah. genuinely. But, like, yeah, they'll be killing so many people. These people are still dancing, getting jiggy with the music. But, yeah, and then that ends with that Killa getting dropped on his fucking head, which
yeah,
is a crazy
down,
kill.
Like, the two stories.
That got, like, a verbal reaction out of the audience.
Yeah.
This dude just splats.
Visceral snap.
And then he pulls one of his gold teeth out. So
he
succeeds in getting abducted to this family. He brands the shit out of his arm.
Yep.
And then he meets up with Bill Skarsgård to set the rules of a duel.
And what I loved about this scene is...
I love this scene.
Again, it doesn't tell us how any of this works. They're kind of referencing these old ways that they do business by. But they sit the two down and they kind of flip cards to determine the rules of the duel.
So yeah, like both of them will name a rule that they want. Like, what time should we do the duel? Bill Skarsgård says dawn, and John Wick says right now. And whoever flips the higher number, that's the rule that gets set in place.
Yeah.
Very interesting way to do it.
I really love
that scene.
Yeah, super, super clever. It's like fun and it like gets you tense about it because you're like, oh, what are they suggesting? And then who's going to win? And then like Bill Skarsgård pulls a high number. So you're like, oh, they're going to use blades. But then John pulls a higher number and they use dueling pistols. And...
So this arrangement ends with basically Donnie Yen is going to fight in Bill Skarsgård's stead.
Yeah.
In this gunfight, if John wins, he is free of this life, and Winston gets his title restored and his hotel rebuilt.
Yep.
And if Bill Skarsgård or if Donnie Yen wins, they both die.
Yeah.
And that sets off a third act where Bill Skarsgård throws everything at John to stop him from getting to the duel at dawn.
I think John's global bounty goes up to like 23 million at the start of this sequence.
Yep. And you get a insane 45 minute climax of pure excess.
Yes.
Pure, every character comes together, every like, and you get some of the most audacious action filmmaking I've ever seen in my life.
So we start with this beautiful shot where John comes up out of the subway right in front of the Eiffel
Tower. With,
like,
classical music playing. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And then we get this really cool lore that there's, like, a radio station for hitmen where she's, like, playing tracks and, like, telling people where to find John.
She's, like, dropping hints of where he is and then playing theme-appropriate songs. She plays a foreign cover of Paint It Black by Rolling Stones. It kicks off this sequence. The first sequence takes place, I'm so bad with names, whatever the name of that famous circle in Paris is, that traffic circle.
Yeah, the big archway.
It kicks off a set piece where he's driving in the middle, the wrong direction in this square, and then he's driving around people and killing them, and it ends with him out of the car, fighting people in the middle of traffic where people are getting hit by cars. He's getting hit by cars. The dog's getting hit by cars.
They're shooting at each other in between the cars passing. And
this is like, one of the most... This is the first time I was like, how'd they film this?
Yeah.
I'm like, obviously some of it is CG because just it's impossible to actually do all of this.
There was a crazy shot where he's like drifting in circles around a group of guys and the camera's on the opposite side and it's just like rotating and so we always see John just like non-stop firing at, like, this group of, like, four cars.
It's fucking insane.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, people get hit by a car and John shoots them in midair, like, while they're falling. I couldn't believe it. John gets hit by, like, eight cars in this sequence.
I was just completely astonished watching this.
This is the movie, if you have trouble turning your brain off or suspending disbelief, this one goes so much further than the first three.
Yeah.
He survives so much shit that is insane in this movie.
Like, he'll get run over by a car and be like, it was just a punch. Like, it's no big deal.
He gets hit, like, eight cars in the sequence, and then a few scenes later, he jumps out of a window, hits a van, and then the concrete.
Yeah,
and then just
falls,
gets
like,
up.
Four stories, and just looks like, ugh.
There's also a part in the nightclub where he gets thrown off, like, 20 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, man is, like... Yeah.
He's just invincible.
It's fun.
He gets out of the traffic on a motorcycle
and
goes into an abandoned building. A group of hitmen attacks him with...
Dragon's breath
shotguns, which he then promptly kills them and steals. And then we get, like, the best sequence in the movie.
The camera is, like, on his shoulder, and then it goes up and keeps going up until it's at the roof. And it's a God's eye top-down view, like an old-school top-down shooter, of him going through about five or six rooms with this shotgun, murking people and setting them on fire. I was a gasp at this.
And it's like at least a five-minute one take or something?
Yeah, it is incredible. Incredible. Like, the choreography and the stunt work and obviously... the set that they had to build and the scale of it, like,
He's like holstering his weapon and switching weapons and reloading and shooting through walls.
Yeah, I genuinely think this is like Oscar worthy production design.
Oh yeah,
I think that, like, oh my god, and then that shot gets over and then they do it a second time.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, we made it through. Like, that was crazy.
They go up again
and then they go back to the ceiling and they do it again.
And then at that point, the tracker, Mr. Nobody, tries to attack him because the bounty has been raised enough for his,
Yeah, he's been manipulating,
Bill Skarsgård to get
Bill
more
Skarsgård,
money.
Yeah.
Bill Skarsgård's, like, negotiating during this. It's like he's such a cheapskate. It's so funny.
Yeah. It gets raised to $40 million.
But the tracker ends up, they end up fighting, but John stops fighting him to save his dog, save the tracker's dog. Which kind of changes the tracker's mind of killing him.
Yeah.
Which
is a really, really kind of cool through line from the first one.
Awesome through line. Yeah. Man loves dogs.
He knows what it means to the tracker
his dog. He knows how important it is. Yeah. And that leads to the final set piece leading up to the duel, which is the stairs. The never-ending goddamn stairs.
Yeah, the stairs of Sisyphus, almost.
So this is the final stand. He has to make it up, I think they say, 220 steps while everyone... And as soon as he gets to the top, he gets kicked all the way fucking back down. And then Donnie Yen shows up to help him.
Because if he doesn't make it to the duel by sunrise...
Johnny Yen's daughter's dead.
He forfeits.
This set piece is hilarious and awkward and fucking intense, and it's such a great way to get to the climax. So many, like just brutal, like, falls down. This stuntman falls down the fucking stairs.
Yeah, and then we get the tracker helping him again now that he's changed his mind.
Yeah.
So it's once again John Wick and the two people that have been trying to kill him now assisting him to get to the duel.
Exactly. And then they finally get to the duel in front of the Eiffel Tower. Or not right in front.
It's like this church up on a high hill.
Yeah, but facing the... Yeah. And the sun is rising. It's like a beautiful landscape. And they have a pistol duel.
Yeah.
And after the first two shots of it, they're both, like, injured. But Donnie Yen more so, he got, like, one in the side. Mm-hmm. And...
They're taking paces closer and closer.
And... John, when the third one's fired, John doesn't fire his bullet, and he's shot by Donnie Yen right through the side. And Bill Skarsgård's like, yeah, give me your gun. I want to finish him
off.
Yeah,
he, like, opts in to, like, be the dueling partner
or something.
But he's
so stupid he didn't realize John didn't shoot his third bullet and just gets nailed in the head.
Yeah.
Such a satisfying kill, such a satisfying moment. You want to, like, fuck you.
Because the whole time you're like, I don't want John to die, but I also don't want... Kane to die.
Yeah, you,
I
want
care
John, you want
Donnie
Yen. Exactly.
Yeah.
And this movie does end with killing John Wick.
Yeah.
John Wick dies.
He succumbs to his injuries on the steps to the church.
He kind of realizes the power of letting go, of, like...
Yeah, I think the line that he shares with Donnie Yen is, those who cling to death live, and those who cling to life will die.
Yes, and he was clinging to life. He was fighting for essentially nothing. So he sits down on the steps, and he thinks of his wife, and then he dies. And I think it's a beautiful ending to him. I think it's a great moment.
And that fits in with the themes that people have been telling him earlier, like... He can only rest now that he's dead.
So. I mean, the fact that he dies on, like, an endless set of stairs leading up to, like, a church is super Greek anyway. Yeah. It's like a pantheon. It's like, like, they're doing this on purpose. They're making it so... And it ends with Winston and the Bowery King visiting his gravesite. They're like, is he in heaven or hell? They're like, you don't know.
Yeah, they have... there's actually a lot of questions about, like, what happens after you die, or does it matter? Donnie Yen kind of believes that the dead are dead, only the living matter. And that's kind of where the inciting conversation that gets John thinking about... Cain actually has something to fight for. He has a daughter, but John has already lost his wife.
Yeah.
So is the memory of her worth more than the living daughter that Cain has?
Exactly. This movie is amazing. Yeah, just talking about it, I'm like, oh my god, so much.
I could watch it again right now.
I could too. It is 2 hours and 45 minutes, but it doesn't feel like it. And this applies to all these movies. It doesn't feel like they waste time. It feels they're super focused on what they want to do. Each one accomplishes the goal that it sets out to do.
Yeah.
This is aside from Mission Impossible, or the recent Mission Impossible 4, 5, and 6, this is the most consistent action franchise ever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're supposed to go downhill. Like, Die Hard goes downhill. Like, all Terminator goes downhill. You're not supposed to have the fourth movie be the best one.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that feels like it's the top of its craft. Like, it's the top of this franchise.
It feels like it is the best action filmmaking in years.
Yeah.
And it feels like... Very rarely. It's rare for an action movie to be this good. It's even rarer for an American action movie to be this good. And the fact that it cribs from Hong Kong cinema and stuff like that makes it feel like, okay, he knows
work from Ray Guys. And all.
He knows where the good shit lies, where the skill is. So go see this on the big screen. It's worth it.
See this in theaters.
Seeing it with the big sound. The first sound in the movie is him punching like a block, and it sounds like the loudest thing you've ever heard.
Sounds like an explosion every time.
Go see this in the big screen. This franchise is amazing. Thank you for watching these all with me.
Yeah.
It was a blast.
It's been fun.
Thank you for joining me for the podcast. You have anything to plug?
Just that I'll be on this next week.
You will be on this next week. Next week, we are talking about Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves. You are a big D&D
D&D is my shit.
Yep, and along with that, we're going to be watching the shitty 2000 Dungeons & Dragons as well. We're going to be talking about D&D. We'll get into some D&D lore, and you can give us a lot of background context in terms of creatures and monsters. Should be a good time. Until then, if you like the podcast, you can follow it on Twitter and Instagram at Cinema Shakedown, and you can follow me personally on Twitter and Letterboxd at Kyle Craigbaum. Have a good week, guys.